Well, hello everybody. My name is Melissa C. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York and I'm super excited to discuss this appendix, not a chapter, but an appendix, and to have so many newcomers here. I think it's an awesome time if you're new to this meeting that you're arriving because we're talking about like the most important component. Is the spiritual component. And so when people say, I got the program, but I didn't really get the spiritual aspect of it, they never got the program then, because there is no spiritual aspect of the program. This is a spiritual program. And I heard someone say one time that, the 12 steps without the spiritual component is like a life jacket without the fluffy stuff inside that keeps you afloat. It's pointless. It's useless. It's pointless, and it can't save you. Cannot save you. The spiritual component is the only thing that can save us. So, I'm excited to talk about it. But before I do, I'm going to take an opportunity. I'm going to share my photos since there are new people here, and I think, it helps clarify why someone like me needed a spiritual component. So, I'm gonna. Make it big, let's see. Here we go. Okay. So, and I love to show my pictures because here's what happens when I show them. They're a visual representation of what a miracle looks like. And I'm lucky. Can you believe it? I'm lucky that I suffered morbid obesity because my miracle, my transformation is visible. It's internal. Trust me, it's internal too, but I wear it. And I think that is a great asset. Because what happens is, I share my photos and I would do it at face-to-face meetings too. I had this little plastic baggie that I would carry around or a photo album. And I would, anytime I shared, anytime I was the speaker, I'd pass my photos around. Because what I found is that people start looking at them and they lean in a little closer. They decide, you know what? Maybe there's something here that's going to work. So, I'll just go through them quick. This is a picture of me and my husband when we had just had our daughter. So she's going to be 21. So I was overweight. I was morbidly obese at this point. I had battled weight my whole life. But I had some years of thin and some years of heavy. And I thought, no doubt, I was going to lose this weight because I have this lovely little baby that I was crazy over. And a happy husband, and we are very much in love. So it made no sense that I would continue to eat. I thought I only ate when I was upset. And but here I am in the pink. I got larger. She got older. I don't know if you could see the rest of us, but still in love, still a beautiful little girl. She got older and I got bigger. So being happy didn't work. And this is us again. I think I lost weight in between and regained it, and we're out to dinner, which is what we did a lot. Because in the grips of my disease, not that going out to eat is a lovely thing to do, but it was what we did. Because when you're owned by food, like I was, food determined what it was that I did for enjoyment. I didn't hike, I didn't kayak, I didn't do other things because if food wasn't involved, I wasn't all that interested in it. So we went out to dinner a lot. And continue to be happy in many ways, in many ways not. This is us again, yet again, out to dinner, lost a little weight, regained a little weight. I can see my face there. I don't look so happy. I look like I'm glazed over a lot. In the red, that was actually, I was having a party at my house that day. And I did not look like I was having a party because I could barely brush my hair. Could barely take care of myself. I looked a mess, and if you see the house behind me, it's a mess. It was a mess. It was hard for me to do anything. The picture of me in the sunglasses were on vacation. I was really happy there. We were having an awesome vacation, a wonderful time. I think I was about a day or two away from picking something up on my vacation because I was abstinent at this point. I had not had a spiritual awakening. I was abstinent, and abstinence alone is not enough. I must have a power greater than myself, and a food plan isn't that power. So I picked up something on this trip, and it didn't go so well. By the end of the trip, I was not smiling. I was eating. And I love this picture side by side because the picture of me and the leopard was, I was probably at the worst time in my life. The worst time. I had this little baby who I was crazy over again, another child that we were crazy over, had a lot of loss in between, and he was very much wanted. And I could not enjoy being his mother. I could barely hold him because the size of my body made it difficult for me to put my arms around him and pull him in close. And he was extraordinarily active, and so I couldn't keep up with him. And I would cry because I couldn't keep up with him and I couldn't hold him. And yet I wanted him and I felt guilty. I felt ashamed. I felt like I was causing all of this and I couldn't understand why it was that I couldn't stop eating, but I couldn't. I just couldn't. And the picture, next to it, I like that because it shows a real, it shows the visible transformation of a few years. And we were so happy he got a little, certificate for honor roll, my sweet boy. And I'm in a normal size body at that point. So it was, and I was recovered. Here's a picture of me with my sisters and my sister-in-laws. I used to have to drink a lot and eat a lot to get through family functions because I showed up at every family function with a list in my brain of all the things that all the people did that weren't in agreement with what I thought they should be doing. I walked in with a lot of resentments. And if I was dieting, I was mad that they were eating. And if they didn't have enough, I was mad that they didn't have enough. And if, and I spent a lot of time at family occasions drinking and stuffing food in my pockets. I would be eating in the bathroom because I was embarrassed of how much I was consuming. And I felt like there was a wall between me and these people that love me. I have a loving family, imperfect, loud, obnoxious, opinionated, just like me, and loving. And I could not experience the love of my family. That's the sad part about this disease. These are another picture side by side. The picture in the gray, I'm actually recovered. It was a happy, happy occasion. My body hadn't caught up yet, but I was in a recovered state. And the difference was at this particular family function, I was making a bas mitzvah for my daughter, spent a fortune on tons of food and alcohol. There was a room for dessert. And none of it called my name. But better than that, I felt connected and loving towards all of my guests that were there. I didn't feel like a glass wall was between us. I felt really happy, completely joyful. And here's a picture of my mom and I, a more recent photo. I just thought it'd be nice to kind of add that. And this is me, pretty much. Every one of those dresses fits me. And I know it. Without even wondering, I just go in the closet and pull it on. And to show it, I wore one of those dresses in October because the dress I was going to wear, it was too cold that day. And I just went in my closet and I pulled this out. And it was awesome that it fit and I knew it would fit. And here's some other family photos side by side. This was me, with my kids and my husband. I think I was dieting at this point, not successful. I was like about to regain it all. And there's us in a more recent family photo. And there's another one side by side eating out together. So those are my pictures. And hopefully that's like a good visual demonstration, right? It's the convincing testimony. It's actually how we're supposed to carry the message. We're supposed to show what it was like, right? What happened and what we're like today. So let's get into the appendix of because we're going to look now in the back of the text, which if you're like me, I never really looked at the back of any text, especially if it was called the appendix. What is an appendix anyway? It's a section of extra information added to the end of the book. It's supplementary material, and it's usually attached all the way at the end of the piece of the writing. So It's actually meant to add important information. It's supposed to, it actually adds very important information. And so what's it adding to? Adding to what? Well, let's look to see where the asterisk actually comes in the text, because it comes in two spots and it's important. What are the paragraphs that point us to the appendix, and what are these paragraphs saying that might require supplemental information for some of us? So we're going to kind of flip back and forth. So let's turn to page 27, which is perfect, right? Here's the solution. We're going to find out what our solution is. And some of our alcoholic readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Yep, that was me. I thought I could do this without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with his doctor. The doctor said, "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does with you." Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him without a clang, right? So he found out he is in serious trouble. He's powerless. And many of us come here and we feel like, this is the last house on the block. Everything else has been closed to us. He said to the doctor, "Is there no exception?" "Yes," replied the doctor, "there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them." And it's funny because when you look at my pictures, you don't see that an entirely new set of attitudes, ideas, emotions have the old ones have been booted out and new ones have come in. And you can't necessarily see that there unless you look at my eyes. But I know it. I can feel it inside of me. And it's he says, "In fact, I've been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangements within you. With many individuals, methods which I employed are successful, but I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your description." So to me, when I read that, because it's going to point to the appendix, it says a spiritual experience, right? It sounds like a huge change that happens to a person. That's what the definition really is. The way one thinks, one feels, and behaves gets moved away. And a whole new way of thinking, feeling, and behaving takes over. They say like our life perspective gets completely overhauled, it gets completely taken out. And reconstructed and put back. Now we're going to look at we agnostics, which again is going to point us to the spiritual experience before we get into it more. Page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. So when people say that they can't have a spiritual experience because they haven't figured out what their conception of God is yet. This is telling me no, that's not true. Because my conception can be inadequate. It might not be formed yet, it could still be in its formative stage, but I can still make an approach and then have a contact, effect a contact. Because as soon as we admit it, so here's what we need. As soon as we admit the possible existence of creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we begin to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, The realm of the spirit is all inclusive, never exclusive or forbidden to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. And the spiritual experience in the back of the book is really going to discuss that idea of as long as you are open, you have to be open. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions, which you may find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterwards, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but we wished to grow. We had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. And so we're asked, but one short question, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? And as soon as the man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this spiritual cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And then again, we're reminded, be sure to read the appendix. It actually says it on the bottom. Be sure to read the appendix, which is something I never would have done on my own. You know, I actually had to be told twice in the book, right? We have to be told twice, turn to the appendix. And so clearly they want us to read it because it's going to help us make something inconceivable conceivable. I've been repeatedly told in the book, all of the step one chapters, right? In all of the step one chapters, we keep getting the same message that on my own, I cannot overcome the disease of compulsive eating. That I must form a relationship with God and I must have this idea, this spiritual awakening. I have to have this experience. Okay, so now let's look at the appendix. Now that we know that this is going to be crucial for us, the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism or compulsive eating has manifested itself among us in many different forms. So it shows up very different in lots of different people. So this paragraph is telling us exactly what a spiritual awakening is or a spiritual experience is. It's a personality change, which sounds to me so earthly and not really all that spiritual after all. And you might be thinking, like I was, why do I need a personality change? I don't have a personality problem. I just have a food problem. Nothing wrong with my personality. What if I like myself? What if I like the way that I do things? You know, I'm quite happy with the person I am inside. Well, I can answer that really simply with, you know, if you liked yourself so much, why are you killing yourself with food? Why are you eating yourself to death? I mean, that was my experience. If I was really happy with myself and I loved the way that I was living my life, why did I have to keep eating the way that I was eating when I knew it was bad for me? You know, I knew all the information. Why is it that you know you have an eating problem and yet you keep on eating? You know, you may have more of a personality problem than you know. And it may help too if we can closely look at just what is a personality anyway? What does it mean? What does that term mean, personality? So personality is defined as a characteristic set of behaviors, cognitions, you know, the way you think, emotional patterns that evolve from biological and environmental factors. So, you know, and most theories view personality as relatively stable. So it's how I behave, it's how I think, it's how I feel. It comes from some natural things, some like inborn tendencies, and some things that are environmental. And it's not something, you know, that changes too much. And I would say, like, if you, you know, those of you that have children, you know, some of your kids come to this earth, they get born, they're a little more shy, or they're a little more outgoing, or they're a little more, easily disturbed. They're a little more like fragile. They cry more easily. But so we have some natural tendencies. And then we add in parents and siblings and schooling and religious upbringing and all sorts of experiences and circumstances, and all combined, mix it up when we get a personality, which, we're told actually, scientists or behavioralists say that mostly it's locked in place by a certain age. Your personality actually gets kind of solidified by a certain age. So a spiritual experience means that the things that I do, the thoughts that I have, the way that I feel, even what I like and don't like, the things that scare me, the things that thrill me, the things that challenge me and disappoint me and puzzle me, etc., all those things, all of these things change. And actually, they all change for the better. They don't change for the worse. There's been, for those of us that have had this spiritual awakening, we can tell you there's been a huge improvement. Our personalities are better. And although experts say personalities don't normally change, we know that we have that experience, and it comes from the miraculous hand of God. God comes in and does the impossible. And now, the wonderful part of this personality change, here's the best part of this new personality that we get. It's sufficient, powerful enough to remove the insanity of the magnetic pull of the food. That, to me, is incredible. It's not just that we get this new personality, but this new personality that we're gifted with is a personality that's not drawn to eat every time a little upset, a little discomfort happens for us, right? My personality, I can tell you my personality has been revised. I say it's like Melissa, 2.0, right? An upgraded version of it. I'm improved. And what I found is that the things I like, the things that excite me, the things that I no longer care for or have interest in, they're different. I behave differently. I think differently. My perspective and the worldview, they're not the same. The word that is pervasive throughout all of these steps is change. That is like the big word. I think the spiritual awakening is the awareness that God has taken me as if I were a ball of clay and reshaped me into a far more useful form. And people often, fear this idea of not liking who they become. We have this sometimes. Sometimes people are nervous. They get this thing, well, what if I'm not happy with who I'm going to become? And we're told in the chapter of Vision for You on page 152, it states it so clearly. Yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum? The righteous people I see. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I have, do you have a sufficient substitute? So I can only share with you that what I have noticed. I have not found people in recovery to be boring and stupid. Just haven't. In fact, what I have seen are people who come alive. And anybody, who has had the honor and privilege of working with people who get to recover and change, we see them. We see their personalities change. They come in. Most of the time, we come in very, very obsessed with our own problems. We're full of self-pity. We're full, and we're self-centered. I mean, that's how I was. I was very stuck in the drama of being me. And what happens is that, we begin to have a new passion for living. That poor me becomes like, how can I be helpful? What can I do? How can I help you? We get a passion. God does not turn us into, by the way, he doesn't take us and make us into one homogenous mush. We're not all, we don't all become exactly the same. And what God seems to do is to keep the best parts of us, and he makes them better, more pronounced, and more useful. And the parts that weren't so great, he tweaks it and changes it and removes it. But he doesn't remove the essence of what it means to be you. That's what I have found. The essence of who I am, it's been uncovered. It's been, you know, polished up. It's been improved. So, you know, and now let's get back. It says, yes, it's true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. It's not true. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. So in the big, you know, in the big book in the beginning, there are some people who have these huge revolutionary changes, but it's not their intention to create such an impression that that's the only way. Because many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. So, you know, people believe that this should be a sudden change. And I had thought, you know, for a long time, I thought I must be stuck at step two because I didn't feel God. I was like, I don't feel God. And that God consciousness was the definition of two. I thought that step two meant you get God consciousness, that I would get this powerful awareness of God, that I would change almost magically, and then I would be able to change into this great person. You know, and actually, okay, I didn't even care about being a great person, if I'm honest. I didn't really want to be a great person. I wanted to be a strong person. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be someone who was going to be strong and thin and disciplined. I thought that's what you're going to give me in step two. Make me strong, make me thin, make me disciplined. Basically, give me a lot of willpower. That's what it sounds like. Give me a lot of willpower. And if that's what you're thinking, that's what you're hoping to get, chances are you're not alone in that thought. But thankfully, you're mistaken. Because, of course, there are stories of fellows who had that white light moment. But if you haven't, it doesn't mean that you can't get well. So, among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. And what happens is the friends of the newcomer, sometimes the family, become aware of the differences long before he is himself. So other people start noticing our changes, and he finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. That such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. And what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. So when people say, how long should it take for me to have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening? Here it says it could take a few months. It can take a few months, right? With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped into an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves, right? So we get to tap into God. Okay, so let's talk about this. Most people's personalities do not change overnight. And instead, what we get is an educational transformation through instruction. Right? Educational. It means instruction, information, illumination, and enlightening. They change. We change ever so slowly in measured increments. Measured increments, meaning steps, right? We change in steps. So step by step, we begin to change. And the people around us, they begin to witness our changes, sometimes before we do ourselves. It's one of the most rewarding parts of sponsoring, seeing people come in, owned by the food, physically looking ill, reeking of self-centeredness, self-absorbed, full of self-pity, a lot of blame. I can claim it, you spot it, you got it, because I had it. I'm not like calling anybody out on it. It was how I came in. I couldn't make eye contact. I was so filled with the drama of being me. In the doctor's opinion, we described the witnessing of this transformation, right? That 1 year later, very strange sensation. We know somebody by name. We partly recognize their features, but the resemblance ends there. Because we go from a trembling, despairing wreck to a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. And I love that because the doctor's describing how this person has been transformed. And I've seen it too. Here are some examples if you want to know what it looks like to have a personality change. And if this is your story that I'm telling, then I've had the love, the luxury, the benefit, the wonderful experience of having shared this recovery journey with you. Maybe I've sponsored you, or maybe you're a co-fellow who has shared with me. But I've had people who hate their coworkers and their bosses to suddenly having compassion and actually finding likable traits in those coworkers. By the way, that's part of my story. And I find, like, I'm sure there's other people here who are like, why is she telling what I told her? Because it's common. Because many of us have the same story. People who are unable to be alone without eating, to someone who actually enjoys being alone sometimes and reading, right? I mean, like, that's a difference. Someone who, here's one that's pretty funny, and I've seen this a number of times. People who hate their dogs, who are annoyed because their dog is a bother and a pest and poorly trained, to someone who actually works on training their dog. Someone who spent all their free time vegging out in front of the TV, eating, to someone who watches a particular show and then shuts off the TV, or at least desires to shut off the TV. Someone who argues and fights with everyone, in-laws, coworkers, neighbors, spouses, to someone who just doesn't get worked up that way anymore. Who's like, yeah, I know, she's annoying, so what, right? Those are huge transformations. Someone who's terrified of their loved ones dying and getting sick, to a person appreciative of the gifts of their loved ones right here in the present, who aren't too consumed with thoughts of the future and the fate of their loved ones in the future. Someone who can't get out of bed to see their kids off to school, to someone who rides bikes with their daughter on the way to school each day. What am I describing here? It's a personality change, and it's generally a slow and steady shift that starts with willingness. If you have a profound alteration like these, it becomes clear that it wasn't you that changed you. Of course, you cooperate with the change. Remember, if it's educational, it means you get instruction, information, direction, and guidance, and you're willing to take it and move with it. But the actual change, the transformation that occurs, does not come from humans. That comes from God. That comes from the spiritual experience. All the self-discipline in the world cannot turn a person from someone unable to make eye contact with someone brimming over with happiness and confidence. Self-discipline doesn't do that. We find that these have been given, we've been given an inner resource that we can call upon. And in step three, we're promised it. Actually, we're told in step three and how it works in page 63 that we have a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Okay, that's a personality change. When you are less interested in your little plans and more interested in what you can contribute, that's a definition of a personality changing. And we feel new power flow in when this happens and we get peace of mind, right? That's my personality changing, that I generally have a peace of mind. I'm calm and serene. And I become conscious of his presence. I get God awareness. And I lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, and I'm reborn. So being unafraid of tomorrow, yeah, that's my personality change. So here's the personality change is being described as becoming less self-centered and more interested in other people and interested in how we can contribute, and we become less afraid. Most of us think of this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of the spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. So this awareness that it was an unsuspected inner resource is the God consciousness, that you get aware of this feeling, realizing that God has done for you that which you could not do for yourself, right? And it's the ninth step promises you begin to experience. Most emphatically, here we say, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. So the spiritual experience impresses this understanding that we have to be honest and open-minded to all spiritual concepts. I need tolerance. And I know that I've discussed this, that my tolerance, my definition of tolerance is not that smug, self-righteous way of looking down on other people as though I have to somehow stomach them, but rather that I have the strength inside myself to not pay such close attention to every little feeling of discomfort that comes inside of me. I can learn to tolerate others' ideas and perspectives and accept that different people do things differently. I have to get a little thicker skinned. I can accept that I'm not gonna get my way most of the time, even if my way is the right way. How's that? Even if my way is the right way, I can actually kind of deal with the fact that, all right, it might be right, but I'm not gonna get, it's not gonna happen. The less attached I am to outcomes, the more I trust God. And the more I find my faith strengthened. If I'm not practicing belligerent denial, so it talks about belligerent denial, and I don't want to have belligerent denial, then what is it that I'm living with? What's the opposite? Easygoing, amicable acceptance. It's a decision to allow God to move me from being a skeptic with an eagle eye for the flaws in others and the flaws in the world and things that don't make sense, to a woman who's open to the miraculous and overlooks imperfections. That's someone who does not have belligerent denial, but easygoing acceptance. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. And these are indispensable. Meaning we cannot do without it. So willingness is we cannot do it without being willing. Willingness is the key that helps unlock the door, we're told. Willing means that I take action, even if it doesn't make sense, even if it's difficult, even if it's uncomfortable. And how can we cultivate willingness? Willingness is made up of a lot of desperation, large amounts of pain and desperation, and just a little bit of hope. Because if I'm just desperate, then I'm desperate. Then why would I even be here? And what I usually say to people who say, I don't know if I'm willing, well, you're here. You're here. Something, there must be some hope, because anybody who's here right now decided, maybe there's something that can help me, just maybe, right? And that's often enough, just maybe. So I need honesty, right? open-mindedness as the essentials of recovery too. They're indispensable. There's a principle we're told here, which is a bar against all information, like a block against all the information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. And this to me is probably one of my favorite paragraphs of all because it tells me exactly what my problem has been to having a spiritual experience. You know what my problem had always been? Contempt. I had contempt, the feeling that it was beneath my consideration, that it was worthless or deserving of scorn, that I should disregard something that should be taken into account. That's what kept me in darkness, that I had contempt to something. And that was how I viewed God, spirituality, and religion. And worse was that I never even investigated it. So it was beneath my consideration, and I didn't even look at it. And if that's your position, if you say, well, I just can't get this God thing, I'm not interested in the God thing, I don't want to call it that. I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. That is an attitude that you cannot recover when you have that, you dismiss it without investigating. You know, what I found is God wants me to look for him. He wants me to seek. If you're wondering how you can have a spiritual experience, start by looking for one. One of the best ways I think we can do that is to hear how others found God, is to listen to other people. And that's why we are so, you know, it's important for us to tell our stories and not just a drunkalogue. For those of you, when you are given an opportunity to tell your story, it should be the greatest part of our stories should be, how did you find God? How did you form this relationship with God? Not what did you eat and what was your food plan? And how did you get, right? How did you put the food down? How did you do this? But where did you find God? How did you form your relationship with God? And we like to say, you know, in our little group here, in our community here, we want to make God the star of the story. That God is the star of our story. And so I hope that helped you guys a bit with the spiritual experience. And I'm going to stop and leave some time for questions. Thanks.